This show is presented by SAP. Who am I and how am I feeling? I'm Clive Owen and I'm great, thanks. What if businesses could really understand how their customers feel? It's a thing. It's SAP Experience Management. For more, go to sap.com/XM.
The internet can be your window to the world or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.
Since you listen for free, you love a deal. Here's Ford of Canada employee Daria.
I really enjoy driving the EcoSport because it is like the best mix of a car for me. If an Escape and a Focus were to have a baby, they would definitely produce an EcoSport.
Right now, get over $5,500 in total price adjustments on the 2018 Ford EcoSport Titanium with four-wheel drive. Plus, until September 3rd, get a $1,000 trade-in bonus.
You pay what we pay.
Get your Ford employee pricing today. To learn more, click on the banner.
Neil Ross here, and it's time to get altered and get geeky on Altered Geek with Steve Megatron.
You're tuned in to Altered Geek.
Hello, and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Phillips, and joining me on this adventure into geekdom is Mike the Birdman Dodd and Alex.
I cut you off.
As always, thank you for tuning in. Welcome, guys.
Yes, delicious.
You said delicious.
So how much are we supposed to swear just to peeve off Blanchard?
Minimal, but I will replace your voice with goat sounds.
Can you just replace it anyway? Like replace, I'll talk this entire time and just replace every single word I've done in the entire podcast with a swear word, like animal, barnyard animal, just to peeve them off and just say that Alex was here to enhance the podcast.
So every time you say peeve, I'll just put in there like goat, cow.
When it comes to your phone, you want data first. So Eastlink is giving you 10 gigs for only $70. With that many gigs, never worry about going over your limit. Upload all your photos. Well, except that awkward selfie. Use GPS all over town. Say good morning and good night with video chat. It's time for more data at a price that's fair. 10 gigs for only $70. That's the Eastlink Edge. Visit an Eastlink store today to learn more.
Horse.
Because you know the sound of a duck.
Mr. Ed.
It enhances everything. So
I'm sorry. I'm never gonna get over that.
I know.
Things.
I know. We're just playing around.
Oh yeah.
Enhance Super Troopers. Yeah. So housekeeping of what's been geeky to you this past week?
I had some Eggos earlier.
Eggos. I haven't even seen those things in like forever. Like I remember when that was a big thing, but they're not even that big of a deal now.
And the only reason I got them is because I saw them in like Stranger Things. I'm like, I should have Eggos again because why not?
That's just a relevant reason alone, you know. Just I saw it on TV, so I think I'll eat it.
Yeah, exactly. It makes sense. Why the hell not? I'm trying to think what, not a whole hell of a lot, actually. It's been kind of quiet over here. I've been watching a lot of TV. I really got into this show called Drugs Inc. Mm-hmm. Wow. Drugs are friggin' scary, man. Oh my God. Like, this show makes America look like the worst place on earth. Like, this is Philadelphia. Here's a crack den. Welcome to Portland. It is also the meth capital where the cartels rule. I'm like, oh my God.
Well,
I don't want to go anywhere.
Like 90% of that show is just in Baltimore. So it's kind of what you expect.
It's scary.
He's scared of it. It's TV. Oh.
And okay, this isn't geeky, but it's weird. But I saw this meme and it made me laugh so much. And this week was the MTV Video Music Awards, which had no rock band, so screw them.
Wait, that's still a thing.
That's still a thing.
They still exist?
Yeah.
So, do they still care?
I thought they were just reruns of reality shows and like Degrassi.
So for some reason, Ice-T comes out and starts rapping, so that's cool. But here's what the meme said. There's an entire generation wondering why Detective Tutuello from Law & Order SVU is rapping right now. And I got to thinking, yeah. You know what? They're not wrong.
Well, because, I mean, the last time he had a rap record was, what, like 95? And then
it's
like
been a while.
I mean, people probably know
Body Count, his group, or whatever.
Well, his heavy metal group, which is hilarious too. Because think about how many people that would have pissed off when he first started doing like heavy metal music when he was like a rapper for 20 years.
But yeah, that was about the geekiest thing I've been going out as weird, random documentary type shows. And oh yeah, I've randomly been watching documentaries on YouTube today.
Mm-hmm.
I really need to watch a lot more John Carpenter movies. I just watched a little video on In the Mouth of Madness, and I forgot how much I love that movie.
That's his last good one. Pretty much everything after that was yeah.
I thought Vampires was okay, but
it felt incomplete. It was one of those. It was like half a movie, and then it ended. Same
and
with
then Ghosts of Mars was stupid.
Oh, it's hilariously stupid. And was it Children of the Damned or Village of the Damned? I can't watch that because I know like right after that is when Christopher Reeve hurt himself, right? So, and it was just not a great movie. But yeah, like that whole period from like I'm not a big fan of Halloween. You know, oh, I can't believe I said that. Ooh, but everything he did from The Thing onward, like Christine and all that. From like 1980 to 94, he was like the king of 80s modern, I'm saying in quotes, horror thrillers, right? Where he wrote his own music, performed his own music, wrote the scripts, directed, shot a lot of the stuff himself, edited the film. He's basically like Tarantino or Robert Rodriguez 20 years before them.
Yeah, like it was just really neat going back over his like back catalog and also realizing how much I really enjoy other things that he's done. I think one of my favorite movies that he did was Prince of Darkness. I don't know why I like that movie. I just really do.
Is it because it's the church working with scientists to try to solve a problem? And then was it Alice Cooper plays the king of the hobo people or something that is possessed?
Yeah. It was so just weird. It was, and that's the only way I can describe that movie. It's weird. Yeah, you should watch some of the stuff on YouTube. I also saw something today as well. It was a YouTube documentary, but it was talking about like the genre of slasher films. And I saw this weird thing, because what they used to do back in the day is if they wanted a certain movie to get popular with video rental stores, so way back when they had VHSs, they'd send a promo tape to the store and they'd have one or two of the actors talking to you, the video store owner, saying, "Hi, I'm Arnold Schwarzenegger. And this year for Terminator 2, or something like that, this one Robert Englund as Freddy for Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3. I've never seen that before.
The Terminator 2 one is fantastic with Robert Patrick. And
Patrick, that, yes.
When they talk about how, was it, the videos were $250 a piece. But if you bought four, you got for your store. And these were for rentals, right? And they had a program where it's like explaining to store owners how once you're done with your rentals, they will send you stickers to put on to show that it's a used copy that you can sell. Like it was a new concept in 1990. Like I know a lot of mom and pop shops were doing that, but like it was like the first time Blockbuster started doing that stuff. And they're like, and it'd be aggressively priced at $100 for the tape.
$100 US. Blockbuster's
gone.
Like up here, $100 then would have been like $180 for a single tape.
Yeah,
the most I ever paid was, I picked up, when I was first getting VHS tapes new, I was like 12, I'd use like birthday money. I picked up Snake Eyes. That's a Nicolas Cage movie from like 1997 or 8. And I picked up, I was like, oh, it's $39.99. But that was like a regular price in the mid-90s. But it was like $39.99 or I found a tape for $10. I'm like, oh, it's the same movie. It was letterboxed. And it was like nobody wanted the letterbox copies, even though you got to see more on the screen. So that's when I started figuring out what the difference between widescreen and full screen was because the widescreen stuff was cheaper, even though it was technically superior. And then I think I paid like $35 for, you remember those SLP tapes, like the super low quality super ones?
Yeah.
Yeah. A two pack of Terminator 1 and 2 was like $35 in SLP mode, or it would have, and this is like 95. And of course, it's rated R, but I walk in and I'm like 7 or 8, and they're like, yeah, we don't care. So I just picked it up. But like, it would have been for the SP mode, the regular tapes, it would have cost an arm and a leg. It would have been like $200. And the only other thing I can think of from that time period that I picked up was a video store was selling off their stock. I think I paid $3 for a Dolph Lundgren movie called, I think here it was called I Come in Peace.
Yes, that movie's awesome.
But my copy of the tape was the European copy print, which was the director's cut, and it was called Dark Angel. So when you pop it in, it says Dark Angel, I Come in Peace. And at the end of the tape, it actually had a thing. It's like, stay tuned for special features. And it was all like the interviews with all the directors and stuff. And I was like, wait, there's more stuff on these tapes? Like, because, you know, before DVDs, everybody is used to special features now, right? But it used to be you had trailers at the beginning and that was it. Well, special editions would put like an extra 10 or 20 minutes of features at the end. So that was like my introduction to, you know, special, you know, anything. Because now we take it for granted.
I remember when I discovered certain movies had secret endings to them after watching them and not realizing that, you know, if you'd stayed longer, it's, oh, there's another ending.
Oh, yeah, like Wayne's World or that was probably
Masters of the Universe with like friggin' Skeletor pops out at the end.
Yeah, like I would say Ferris Bueller's probably the first time people one. I didn't know about that one either, but Ferris Bueller's probably one of the first times people even thought about staying through the credits. But because like people used to leave. Now everybody just sort of feels weird when a movie ends and it doesn't have a little thing at the end. I blame Marvel for that.
It is Marvel's fault. So moving on a little bit, although it's not that far in the different direction, but the question for next week is, which we'll answer next week, depending on who decides to show up for the thing, although everybody's invited. Loaded question here, but what do you think about movie franchises in that are they all trying too hard to create universes? Are some best left in the past as, you know, trilogies? Or what do you think when they change the status quo, either by misdirection in trailers or taking characters back to their corporate playgrounds, such as like the whole Spider-Man debacle that's going on? That's a loaded question, but I'm looking forward to seeing what people put in there.
Yeah, that's going to be one we have a lot to talk about.
yeah, that's why I'm saving it.
I'll be here
next
week for sure.
Yes. Me too. So, yes, I decided to bring back the listener questions because that's when we get feedback and topics. So last week I said, what do you look forward to in geek news now with all the latest going on? And kind of mentioned the whole thing of like, you know, the Kevin Conroy playing Bruce Wayne and the CW and, you know, the whole Sony Disney debacle and, the new He-Man revival and, you know, Matrix 4 and, you know, plethora of other geeky news going on. So does any of that resonate?
I'm interested in Matrix 4 only because it has been 20 years. And although it seems like they pretty definitively ended the Matrix trilogy with Revolutions, however, with I think it's Lana Wachowski or it's Lily. I'm not sure.
One of the Wachowskis.
One of them.
That's the easiest way to say it.
So has said they're coming back to write and be involved in the sequel, and they got back Keanu Reeves and Carrie-Anne Moss as Neo and Trinity, though they haven't mentioned anything about Lawrence Fishburne. So I don't know what they're going to do. My guess is it'll be a previous version of the Matrix where they try and find a younger Morpheus or something, because I know they wanted to talk to Michael B. Jordan about a reboot at one point. But I guess I'd rather have a continuation.
That would be really weird going back and finding a younger Morpheus.
I could see it, though. It could be cool, especially because you could say the machines kept a digital backup of their residual self-image in the Matrix servers. So even though their flesh bodies are dead, they can upload their consciousness to a new body. So they're never truly gone. That's okay. If that's the route they want to take, I'm cool with that. It's lazy, but it's cool. I'll deal with it. Other than that, I'm looking forward to a lot of the Disney Plus stuff. Like, I know right now there's a ridiculous deal where if you buy 2 years, you get the third year for free, basically. But not available in Canada, because why not? But we still get the service on November 12th, so I don't care. I'm looking forward to The Mandalorian a lot. Like, a serious lot.
Well, it looks like a mature-rated show versus...
Oh, my God.
Like, it looks like they're going for a more mature audience than they do with the main series.
Yeah, exactly. And I've always loved that seedy underbelly. I mean, we saw a little bit of it in Empire Strikes Back. They talked about it a little bit in Shadows of the Empire, which was like a book series, a comic book, and a video game. So I'm cool. That's interesting to me so far. What about you, Alex?
I'm going with, like, it's almost, I don't know. I'm the Matrix. I don't see a need to do another one other than Keanu is super hot right now. So yeah, maybe. As I'm psyched for the Terminator movie, which, by the way, like 30 seconds ago, they released a press release that there's another trailer out for it, the final one.
There's a new poster, too.
Yeah, so with Arnie in it. Will be watching that after this. now, if we're looking at things, what's the question again? Things that are coming out right now or continuing franchises or?
Well, that was a different topic.
Yeah, I was going to say, the topic for this week was...
Yeah, it was more so this is just the question of last week, was looking forward to like the different geek news coming on.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So I think we're getting overloaded sometimes now with things. I mean, it's a nice change of pace from a lot of the stuff that's happening in the real world with that shit going on. So, okay, so you're going to have to beep that one out, eh?
It's okay.
There's one!
Yes, so other than that, I'm happy with what comes up, but it almost seems like the more we feed ourselves with this information, the faster it comes, the more we expect it to come. It's almost like a drug. We want more. We need to hear more, more, more. Used to be we were insanely happy when a new Batman movie was announced. Or when
we don't care.
Yeah, or it's like, oh, Spider-Man's back. Or there's another X-Men. And now we're like, okay. Like, I'm more excited to see franchises that we haven't tapped, to death. The Sony's, whenever an announcement from Sony comes out about the Valiant comic book universe, like, they got Bloodshot coming out, I think, in February with Vin Diesel.
Nothing on that, though.
But it's got a firm release date. So, I don't know.
They won't make it.
It's probably because everybody's focusing on Spider-Man right now.
Yeah, but it's interesting because people are forgetting that they don't necessarily, like, they need Spider-Man, but what they're not focusing on the fact that they have contingency plans in place with other comic book companies to have their universes brought out. So it all depends on how it's handled. If it's handled well, you have a franchise and an entire comic book brand that 99% of even the comic book users have a tertiary knowledge of. So it's like, this isn't like a case where the X-Men, we got burnt out because how many more stories can we tell that we that, you know, they touched base on all the major stories from every single, you know, era. And it's like, well, what can they do now other than reboot it? Well, they reboot it or try to reboot it, and it turns out to be crap.
And then they went back to the well again with the Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, which is, which was hilariously terrible, that infuriated me when I saw it in theaters. Now, again, I got to see it for free because of a movie theater screw up. So it was so infuriating that I wanted my money back, and I saw it for free. So it was,
yeah, that works.
You know what it was? It was Mutant X, the TV show, if they made a 2-hour movie and were thrown a whole bunch of money for no reason.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. In fact, some of the special effects in there looked about as bad as that TV
probably
show.
Probably because Fox knew they were getting taken over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the same reason why they tanked Stuber. Like, all their releases this summer, Ready or Not, that just came out, fantastic movie. Stuber, fantastic movie. Very little press. They're not doing it. Disney's just letting everything that Fox made die that isn't like Star Wars.
Or money.
Yeah. Like, if it's not something that's going to make them a billion, they're not bothering. And it's kind of sad. Like it's
they're like, we're not funding this anymore. Send your crap back to the
or they're like, hey, and sometimes it can be something petty like, hey, all these films were produced by people that we didn't hire, so we're just going to let them fall apart and then we're going to build up from scratch.
Pretty much. I don't know if you guys noticed this, when they released the Rise of Skywalker trailer. And yes, I know how the whole trailer plays out, but there's a funny scene at the end where Kylo and Rey are fighting on like something in the middle of the ocean or something, like fighting on part of one of the ships or something on the middle of the ocean. And they show Kylo with his cape and everything, but if you look at the reflection on the ground, there's no cape.
So it's an unfinished
CGI thing in the
Here's
trailer.
The question, do you think they're gonna
everybody's
fix
noticing it?
Are they going to fix
that?
It, you think? Or you think they're actually going to fix it?
They'll fix it in the final movie, but for a trailer, who cares?
Well, here's the thing.
Like, I've seen this happen before.
Well, I remember I saw a couple days ago, Angel Has Fallen, and there was a busload of old people in there with me. Like, and I mean like a busload. They all came in at once, like 30 of them, all like in their 80s or 90s. Like some of them were in World War II, right? So the trailer for Midway comes up, the movie about World War II. And I hear boos. They're audibly booing the special effects. And like it looks bad. Like Pearl Harbor from 20 years ago looked 10 times better. This looked like a video game CGI from a good place, a good PlayStation 2 game.
Oh wow.
That's horrible.
Or like you know those bargain bin games, like was it Il Sturmovik or what, all those ones you used to see, the PS3 games that you get for like $2 that are war simulators? It's like that. And it's flying, and one old guy behind me just yells out, I flew planes in Korea. Planes don't fly like that. And it's like, oh, you didn't even get that right. Like, and it's that Roland Emmerich, the guy that does all the disaster movies, like Independence Day, 2012, Day After Tomorrow and all that. Like, at least Michael Bay works with the military to get them to look right. But this looked bad, and I'm like, if like 85 and 90 year old people are saying this looks bad, it's bad. And then I mentioned it on a Discord group chat with some people, and they said, oh, they're probably going to fix it in post. I'm like, hey, before the movie comes out, I'm like, why would you even make the trailer if old people are noticing how bad it is? Who's this movie for? Like, if old people say they don't want to relive a time in their life that they hated, so why would they watch it? I mean, maybe it's made for American veterans are different than Canadian veterans in that sense. Maybe there's more rah, 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 America, yeah. Like there might be that. But a lot of those people, if it's really realistic, they don't want to relive that. That's going to give them flashbacks. Young people aren't going to watch it because it looks like crap. It's got good actors in it. It's got decent cinematography. But if the special effects look like they're 25 years old in the trailer, who's going to bother going to see the movie when it's actually finished?
I guess that almost begs to mention whether we're kind of getting on that like heavy CGI train and like just trying to pump out the most crap that we can instead of putting out less. It kind of goes back to that phrase of less is more.
Yeah, like
having practical effects and then kind of trying to actually do research instead of just trying to be the lowest common denominator.
This
pump
movie
out garbage.
Cost, from what I was looking it up, cost the same amount as Top Gun 2. The new Top Gun movie looks fantastic, right? Like, again, it's all about who you hire to do it. You're hiring somebody who's known for making schlocky stuff, but you're throwing $100 million in there or more. Like, this movie, that Midway movie easily costs $150 million. So it's like, it doesn't make sense. Well, it's who they're catering to. Like, Tom Cruise, say what you will about his crazy, wacky beliefs, does not make movies unless he has his hands and fingers in everything. He won't make something that looks like crap or sounds like crap or is crap, pretty much. Like, I can't even really think of anything he's made in the last 20 years that was truly terrible. But then you got people like, Woody
that
Harrelson.
That Mummy movie was pretty bad.
That was bad.
But that wasn't his fault. That was tampering, and you know it. Because he was finding it. But yeah, and it was too dark. But that's the only misstep I can think of. Even there are movies he's made that I wouldn't necessarily watch or like, but they're not poorly constructed movies.
No. But yeah, I kind of agree with that. So A little note to the fans, if you're enjoying this conversation and you'd like to hear more of it, subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms. We're all over the place, so you can pretty much search Altered Geek wherever. And I'm fairly certain you'll find us there. I've also installed a plugin that my good friend Hank Davis on his award-winning Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan podcast developed, which is a WordPress plugin for podcasters called Smart Subscribe plugin, which I'm slowly rolling out on the site. And what it allows you to do is you can put all of your subscription feeds, but you can also toggle things on and off depending on what device people are using. So if they're on an iOS device or an Android device, they won't see, you know, like the 50 other platforms that you're on.
That would be something we could use too. That sounds really good.
Yeah, it's very nice. I just to test it out because I haven't had a whole lot of time to mess with it. On geekcastradio.com, when you go to pretty much any of the, like, you click on just some random post somewhere, it gives you the opportunity to see in the sidebar the various RSS feeds. So right now I have, you know, subscribed to podcasts, and then I have like All Things Transformers, Altered Geek, and then it's got, you know, the 10 different platforms it's on that they feature on that. You can change the color of it, the size, you can have it as a pop-up, you can, so I mean there's a lot of playability with it, but it's super nice. And next week I'll have another hint of another plugin that he came up with that's pretty cool too. Because I'm going to pimp that out on next week's episode.
But. Is it a plugin that forces people to listen? Because once we have that algorithm down, we got it made. You know, we're coming for you, Joe Rogan.
Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it? You know, having something that's like subliminal. You know,
forces people to listen, or no, forces at minimum 10% of the listeners to give feedback too.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, speaking of feedback, I have a partial solution to that one in the next episode. So. I'll let you guys in on it before, but I'll hold the listeners in suspense because I don't have it installed yet. So anyways, listener feedback for last week's episode. Brad mentions that thanks to Mike's statements about Stranger Things, he's going to give it another shot as the premise sounds good. He says, my issue might be, well, child of the 80s. I didn't see a lot of those films growing up, so it doesn't resonate. You know, he says, I dislike Transformers Bumblebee, which actually was awesome.
It's the best one.
It is the best one.
Even like
it actually
like,
followed.
My brother saw it, and he's a child of the 90s who never really watched, like he was significantly younger than me. He watched them and just like objectively, he's like, this is a better made movie.
It is. Michael Bay may have launched the series and gotten it, you know, to get where it was, but it definitely needed that evolution.
Yeah, his movies are technically superior, probably, but they never have the same amount of heart.
They didn't have heart, but they were popcorn movies. That's about as far as they go. But yeah, he says he's not really going along with the feel invested in actors not his own age or similar. Can't follow kids' storylines anymore. Or streaming services. I don't know if it's fatigue or just how do they, one, expect us to watch everything we want to watch and to afford that between Netflix and TV, catch-up apps. My week of TV viewing is already longer than I have the time to commit. Disney is the one I'd consider getting, depending on how it works here in Australia, solely because of the back catalog subscription sites. Because we talked about that too. He says my local newspaper has always been free to view online. The physical paper costs, you know, $1.50 and whatnot. But they put a subscription on it. You can only read the first sentence of the article when you have to pay $2 per episode to read, and I hate that.
We've had that here too. And it's, you know what? People find other ways. Other websites will aggregate the information and share it. Like, there's nothing you can really do about that. Like they're not going to make money off that.
No, that's why I refuse to do any of that kind of crap content because it's so like bait and switch. Like it's so crap.
Well, and think about a cable package nowadays. Like, if you want live TV, you're spending $50. Well, you know what you could do with that $50? You could subscribe to four different
streaming services.
Like you could get Netflix. You could go Netflix, in the States, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and Disney, and save $10 and have all the content you could possibly want. Because if you don't have time to watch it, like if he's saying he doesn't have time to watch all that stuff, Well, then he doesn't have time to watch it live anyway. So it won't matter that you're watching it. You know, it's basically like having a PVR that you can watch whenever you want.
Pretty much.
And if you have Amazon, in Canada at least, I don't know if they have it in the States, for like, I think it's $7.99, you have a program called Stacks with it where you, if you're a Prime member, you can get up to 20 channels of live TV anyway, of even like local broadcast stuff from a couple of the companies. So there's packages that you can do like that to save a lot of money. So you don't have to get like Shudder and Funimation. You pick and choose the ones you want. Like, give yourself a $50 budget if you really want to consume that much, or do what most people do. Most people, like their family member, will buy Netflix, get the highest tier one, which is like the $16 or $20 one, and it allows up to four people to log in at the same time. And it's supposed to be for family, so you could share that cost amongst three or four people, and you're only paying $5. Pretty much. You can do that with Amazon Prime. Does that as well. So you can have up to two or three people, I think, logged in at the exact same time. So if you're smart about this, for $20 a month, you could have four or five services that you share amongst your entire family.
Totally. And Scanner 51 says, great episode with me and Dodd. He says, hey, guys, want to say that the last few shows have been great. Love hearing both Mike and Birdman on the show. Well, now he's getting another flavor because Alex is here. So
yeah, spicy Alex. Alex, yeah, is all spicy. Too, Alex, too spicy.
As I can hear Steve making notes for when to do that.
I am making notes. That's because he wants to have like the entire barnyard from Old McDonald's farm.
I want to take the throne away from Blanchard. I want to be the swear word king, you know. I can hear the notes being taken down, and I don't care.
All right.
Okay, I'm done now. I don't want to hurt anybody. Tirades.
So he says, I want to talk about subbing. As I've said in the past, I sub. I got a few. The ones I pay for out of my pocket are Google Play Music, WWE, and the DCU. Sirius XM and Prime are paid for by our main credit card. I don't feel too fatigued by the three I have. But then again, it's only three. And I'm happy to report that neither of those services sit idle. They're almost always in use. Right now, the DCU one might be the best bang for my buck, giving me 20,000 available comics to read. He says, my wife is leaning towards getting the bundle package for Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN. We'll see. Also, thanks for still answering emails. Some podcasts I listen to have gone to a patrons-only get answers format.
Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah, that's BS.
It's just evil.
I understand, like, here's the thing. If you're going to answer questions only for patrons, it should be for episodes that are only available to patrons.
Pretty much.
Like, if you have bonus content, like, it's like, ask us questions here and then pay us $5 a month. It's like, no, that's not how that works. If you have questions regarding content that is already behind a paywall, then you can do it that way.
Yeah, I'm of the same opinion. Like, I honestly hate that. Because your show means nothing if you're not getting feedback.
Well, and the people that try to do that, like an average podcaster, like if you're starting out, you might have zero listeners. You might have 10, you might have 20, but like it only works to do that sort of paywall thing when you're like any of the people, the people running those, a lot of the pro wrestling podcasts from former WWE people, they're in the 100,000 a week or 150,000. Or you hit like Joe Rogan, where he can't answer any stuff because he's literally got 5 or 6 million downloads a week over the course of 9 hours of podcasting that he does a week. So yeah. There's a point where you can get too big to do it, or you can only do it for specific people that do pay, because it's like you'd be inundated with so many questions you can't answer them. So the sweet spot would probably be like, it'd be nice if you had like that 100,000 mark of people listening to you, because you can still answer people's questions then, because only 1% of people are really going to ask questions anyway.
Pretty much. So
if you get 100 questions a week, that might be too much, and you can usually you can find a way to answer that. But like a good round number would be like, it'd be nice to have 10 or 15 people asking something every week, because you can make an entire program out of that.
Exactly. And that's what I like. Plus the back and forth, like, you, although they may not be on the air with you, it almost feels that way when you get to have that conversation based on their feedback. And I feel like you lose that if you start to kind of stonewall these people and prevent them from interacting with your show, like just out of, you know, a money thing, you know. And I just, I don't know. It just rubs me wrong. It's not something I would ever do. Even if I got bigger, that's not something I would do.
Yeah. Like certain content I feel should always be free. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of Patreon right now. I mean, I subscribe to maybe three people and it's less than $10 a month. I don't mind that.
To me, it would be better if you had, like, what was that one, coffee or something, where people can just give a tip now and then if they like you. That's the sort of thing that's a little better. Like, as it is, most podcasts, I'm going to say probably 99% of them out there don't make any money, even off of ads. They're making enough just to break even. And that's what most people want to do. It's a hobby. If this is going to be your business and you're going to make, and you really start making, you know, big money with it, you don't need patrons. If you're at a point where you're getting paid sponsorships all the time,
you don't need them at all.
So the only reason for that is pure greed.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, I don't agree with, like, charging people for things. And that's kind of, cause like I myself can't afford to support some of my favorite creators. So like it's kind of, I would rather support them and have to hear like some kind of a dynamic ad insertion or some, you know, live read that's on their show rather than have to fork over money out of my own pocket. And that's just kind of my own mentality on it. But yeah. I feel like that's the easier way to go where you're not hurting their pocketbook.
Well, and the other thing too is like there are other ones out there where I do think that it's a worthy thing to have, like the other stuff that Mike and I are involved in with Terrible Warriors, right? They have patrons, but what that does is that lets you interact and actually play games with people too. It's a way to also keep the server costs running. So you're at a point where if it's self-sustaining and keeping running, I understand that. If you're not getting ads another way, or you don't want to place ads in something because it could be very detrimental to the type of programming you're doing, right? Like there are certain shows, especially if you're doing like we're on Twig, we will do you know, commentaries where you watch along with us on like a movie or something weird that we do. And when we do that, those are ones where we don't want ads to go anywhere in like dynamic inserted into the mid rolls or anything. You don't want anything like that because it can break up the pace of the entire program. So mm-hmm. I can see where some people would, to avoid that, might go with like a patron type system.
But even then you could do almost like a, you know, have all your regular content for free and then do like, you know, your commentaries is like one of those.
Yeah. Very true.
Add on or have it as like something that you, cause I mean, it's really a commentary. You're not recording the actual audio of the program. Technically you could even have it as a digital download.
If you're asking money for every single time you go out in the show, like if you're like, I'm somebody who like, I like Twitch and everything, but your Twitch and Mixer and things like that, they're only a couple steps away from basically being a cam girl or cam guy where you're begging for money. And
the way I love how they all like so like fakely and enthusiastically, oh, thank you so much when they get donated money. And it's like, really?
Like, if I'm donating $5, that girl better be doing something, or that guy better be doing something that I ask.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, and it's ridiculous. Like, I don't know. It's something about it just weirds me out. I see those people act like fools like that.
Yeah. Like, if you're being genuine about it and just being like, oh, thanks so much, man. Like, or thanks so much. That's one thing. But it's when you go way over the top with it, because what you're doing then is you're manipulating people that, you know, especially when it's people that recur, like pay all the time, you're playing with people's minds, making them like, you're trying to prop them up to make them sound like they did something really good by giving you money. And at that point, you're not much better than a TV preacher if you're just there just to scam people out of money.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it's the person's choice. If they're genuinely entertained and they want to continue to contribute,
which again, that's perfectly fine. But it's the same thing with like loot boxes and games. There's a point where, at what point is it an addiction you're feeding? If somebody's giving you their entire paycheck because they think they have a relationship with you or something.
Yeah.
Well, that's
a problem.
Didn't you see the thing recently that Loot Crate or whatever it is was filed with bankruptcy?
Yeah, they filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy a couple of weeks ago, and they owe $20 million, or they have to ship $20 million worth of material out. They owe $6 million in back taxes, and wow. They owe some more money all over the place. Even their credit card processor pulled out because they were afraid they would get hit with chargebacks.
And they don't do that until like 6 months out. So they were tanking and didn't say anything to anybody.
Yeah, like something is wrong. I mean, we had a service up here in Canada called NerdBlock, and they went under similar ways. They were owing people money all over the place. They weren't shipping crates.
Didn't that happen to like GamerGrub too?
No, I think they just simply just took their ball and went home. I don't know anything more about that particular situation, but
I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that one, they were trying to sell this like cheap package subscription service, which obviously was not paying off for them. But
it was diminishing returns. In the beginning, it was cool. Here's a t-shirt. Here's a toy. Here's some cool tchotchkes you can't get anywhere else. Here's a button.
They started bundling a bunch of extra crap in it that just nobody cared about. It was just garbage, like stuff that, like, honestly, if I was going to subscribe to it, I would be offended to get half the items that were in there other than, like, maybe the t-shirt, the one comic, and then the...
Those reversible hats and stuff, they showed up at our Dollar Tree here for $1.25 Canadian, and they were not good quality. They're kind of cool to have, but the other thing to consider is anybody that was an international buyer got raped on the fees. Like, if it was $20, it would be $40 to ship it U.S. So that $20 box per month ends up being $80 Canadian.
I did it once when the Ghostbusters 2016 movie came out, and the box was $50. I paid $30 in shipping. The only thing I have left from that box is I have the replica Proton pack, and I have the Ghostbusters rug.
And the thing is, and that's not including if you get hit with custom fees, and that's just Canada. Yeah. There were people in England and Australia that were trying to buy them, and that's like five times the price. So they said that they were a worldwide shipper. Oh yeah, let's ship worldwide, you know. And at that point, like, I'm not paying that kind of money for a t-shirt. it just doesn't make any sense, like, especially for the crap that they were peddling near the end.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
You shouldn't go to Barnes & Noble and buy 10,000 books just so you can build a book fortress and yell out, "I am your book leader." You shouldn't buy 147 copies of War and Peace, stuff them inside turkeys, and serve them at Thanksgiving as turbookins. And you definitely shouldn't buy up all the copies of Dork Diaries, causing the neighborhood kids to stage a protest in your front yard. But you could. Because at the Barnes & Noble Book Haul, you can get over 1,000 titles for 50% off. Stock up at your local Barnes & Noble. Turbookins are fictitious and should not be cooked at home.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. I just... Something about, like, those boxes just... I never really got into them, and so they didn't really resonate, so it was kind of just funny to me that seeing that all of a sudden, oh, they're getting bankruptcy. Like, it's not fun for the people losing their jobs or for the people that got, you know, or having to wait on these items that they paid for, but I never saw those boxes lasting long.
Well, and it's weird how many different services and ones popped up in their wake. I mean, there were some health food ones, which are pretty cool. There's like ones that are different candies from around the world.
Yeah, the ones that will survive are the ones that are to a very specific audience. The wrestling one might go because those fans are rabid. All of the ones where it's like Japanese candies and stuff will go because food lasts, like, it just goes better for that kind of service. The Nature Box will be there, like Harry's Dollar Shave Club Bark Box. There's certain ones that will survive because people don't want to have to go buy those things. Like, with the shaving ones, you're saving a trip to the grocery store or to the pharmacy. So, and they're cheaper. So like, I understand those, and those fit in an envelope that just go in your regular mail, and they're like under $10. So that makes perfect sense. And I think in Canada, you only pay $2 for shipping on some of those. So that makes sense. But even look at like Humble Bundle. Humble Bundle was fantastic the first 2 years. Every single bundle came with a t-shirt at the highest tier for $30, worldwide shipping for free. I got some pretty neat like Sonic the Hedgehog t-shirts and different things out of there that you can't get anywhere else. I even got they had a bundle. The last good one was, I think, Saving the Gorillas in the Rainforest for Jane Goodall. And you actually, for paying the $30 or $40, you got it showed you that you had paid for all the inoculations and food for an entire year for a gorilla. And you got a picture of the individual gorilla that you saved and a little stuffed animal with a, and a card, you know, with a little note on, you know, thanking you for everything. That's cool. Now it's all crap. Ever since they were bought by IGN, it's like six bundles a week or every other week, and they're all garbage. Like, it's all stupid software. You don't get anything physical anymore. And so what's the point?
The last good one I had from Humble Bundle is where you got the old World of Darkness source books. I think you got a ridiculous amount.
I did get the D&D ones. I still buy those occasionally because they're cheaper than going through DriveThruRPG. So you can get those. But other than that, like, I'm not spending $30 for digital copies of books or games. Like, and they run the same bundles over and over again with like a couple different games. It's like, it's not the same. And they wonder why people aren't buying it as much. Well, because you're not giving away anything good. It's the same thing that happened with Loot Crate. It's the same thing that happened with any other subscription service. When they get lazy, they wonder why they're not selling.
Yeah, I remember with Loot Crate, they kept pushing in this month's Halo Reach. Like, that game came out in like 2010. Or they'd push the like other game bundles. And it was so weird. Like, they never seemed topical. Like, it's never like, hey, here's a Borderlands one, or hey, here's a Power Rangers one. It was always just really weird, random license properties.
Or like, they'd give you like those really stupid Mighty Mug figure type things, or the
whatever they could liquidate from somebody who couldn't sell stuff last year.
Pretty much. It was all garbage either way. Like, I couldn't stand it. So that's why I never subscribed to any of them.
At $20, okay, but at $40, you're asking a lot.
Well, not to mention $40. It's $40 US. Again, for anybody up here, it was never going to be worth it.
I think even right now, Amazon is doing two more Smuggler's Bounties, which is a Star Wars loot box, and then they're throwing in the towel.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. That kind of going away anyway. So I think we'll move on to the last topic, and I'm going to skip some of the other ones just for time, because I know it's late where you guys are.
Are we skipping the Laserbeak one? Because that looks really cool.
No, that one we're going to do, because that one's funny. Then we're going to go to the Star Trek conversation. But no, Michael Wilson, who's been on a lot of the Geekcast radio programs, he says, I have no idea what this is, but I'm pretty sure I spotted Laserbeak on top of this gas station. And then he takes a picture, and then there's a closer picture, and it looks like Laserbeak.
It looks like it's a ventilation system with a hatch open and some other air conditioner, and it's 100% Laserbeak. Like, I would be terrified.
It's a Decepticon.
They're spying us.
Yeah, like, I'm just waiting for like the music, because Laserbeak sees all.
Yes, Laserbeak does.
Unlike some of my other warriors, you never fail me.
Oh God, we can go for the next 70 minutes if you want, reciting every single line. We could even give stage directions, or if you really want.
Unlike some of my other warriors, you never fail me.
Yeah. Frank Welker's awesome.
I mean, the next line would be to go into Starscream, but I don't think we want to wreck our voices like that.
Yeah, I don't want to do that this late. There's too many people sleeping in my house.
There's too many people sleeping in my apartment building. Yeah.
You'll make the voice, and then we'll hear in the background, we'll hear your wife just, you're done. What are you doing? You're scaring the children.
You're not playing with your friends anymore. Go to bed.
Your friend privileges have been discontinued. Good day. And you're sleeping on the couch.
No fizzy lifting drink for you. You lose.
You lose. All right, so.
I love how your wife is now Willy Wonka.
I was picturing the guy that runs the door in The Wizard of Oz with the curly mustache just happened to be your wife instead.
She doesn't have a mustache, so.
I know, but I mean, she could. She could. You could give her one, I guess. Make it out of. Yeah.
Just, anyway.
Yes, anyways. That's where the conversation is going at 12:40 in the morning, our time.
Yes, it's 10:40 my time, so I'm still very coherent. So anyways, the new Trek. There's possibilities of a new Star Trek with Pike's Enterprise, which would you guys be up for that?
Yes.
Let's get through what we got on our plate.
Now, Mike, have you caught up yet?
I'm on episode 10 of Discovery. I still season 2, episode 10. I still got a few more episodes.
The last two episodes might be the most impressive special effects I've seen for television ever.
At least for
a space battle, like. We're talking Game of Thrones level if Game of Thrones is in space.
Yeah, there's purging of characters, there's explosions, there's things you would not expect.
Back like 10 years ago when Battlestar Galactica had their final battles and you're like, wow, like the CG wasn't the best, but you're like, wow, there's like 100 things on screen at once. There's like 10,000 things happening at once in this.
Yeah, because there's the little Starfleet pods. And then all the Section 31 like pods all battling. Yeah,
like little drones. Like it's,
yeah, little drones. It's crazy.
You know, in Star Wars Episode 3, the very beginning where they have the big space battle?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, only even more stuff going on.
Oh.
It's crazy, honestly. Like it is. The nice thing is you actually get to use Pike's Enterprise in Star Trek Online with those features, with those drones.
Oh,
and you get to send like 18 of them out. Now, granted, you have to get one of their little infinity boxes to unlock it to get it.
Okay, well, I mean, that sounds cool.
Yeah. So, but it's you can get that, or you can get the old Constitution class, or you can get. I mean, granted, this one looks just like the one off the episode.
Now Mike still has to catch up on the Orville, I believe. I don't think he's seen a single episode, maybe the first one.
I've seen like the first three.
Okay.
Yeah. It's better too.
Especially the second season. The second season, there's the two-parter with the space battles.
Mm-hmm.
That is fantastic. And again, I thought that was the best looking thing I'd seen until I saw, the Discovery episode.
Well, the thing about the Orville is it's like TNG. It's like watching a really up-to-date TNG.
Well, it has the same, even the same camera angles.
They did that on purpose.
Yeah,
he wanted to replicate the Next Generation, and so they took that vantage point with it. And so that's why Discovery is more cinematic, and that one's more.
Best way to describe it for Mike there is, Mike, First Contact.
Yes.
You know the battle at the very beginning of First Contact?
Yeah, the battle of Sector 01.
Okay. Replicate the amount of ships on screen by about 10 to 15, and make it the Cybermen from Doctor Who.
Cool.
And that's what you get. So, and as you go on, the comedy gets toned down from being like Family Guy-ish, and it becomes more subtle and funny. Like there are parts that I was like, I'm laugh out loud laughing at parts of it without it being, hitting me over the head with it. And then at the same time, they explore a lot of the same social issues, like not the same as TNG, but a logical progression of what TNG would be if they had made TNG today. So transgenderism, certain things, religion, and it follows a parallel to what's going on into society now.
Media.
Yeah.
The voting and social media.
Oh yeah, there's
downvote. You did something evil. We hate you.
Yeah, and if you're downvoted to a certain point, your popularity goes down. You just get killed.
Yeah, well, they don't kill you. They lobotomize you.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and And to the more upvotes you have, they equate being popular to being a good person.
It's crazy. It's such a social commentary that it's actually like really, really intelligent how it's written.
And I'm glad that they didn't cancel it, even though they had to move it to another streaming service. But still.
They moved it to Hulu.
Which is actually hopefully going to be better for it.
Which it's probably Disney's way of saying, we're not canceling it. But.
Yeah. Well, it looks like the Fox properties are basically going to be on Hulu. And then all the Disney properties and ABC properties are going to be on Disney.
Pretty much. Yeah. And I wonder what that's going to do to Last Man Standing, to be honest. Because it got canceled from Disney's ABC, and then they get to Fox, and they're like, sucks to be you, ABC.
They're going to look at it and go, give it to MGM. They need something.
Yeah, pretty much. So anyways, yeah, if once you get caught up, you'll kind of agree that, you know, they're pretty much open for the characters of Pike number one and Spock coming back and doing like adventures of that Enterprise. They are going to do three of those short treks,
which were fantastic. The last ones,
these are going to be better because they're going to feature on Pike's Enterprise. Three of them, and two of them are going to be animated.
Spock, who I didn't like at the beginning, he's grown on me. He's not going to ever be my Spock, but he's a good Spock.
They actually made him, like, you get to actually see him with clean shaven face, like, at the end, and that's, I mean, I'm not spoiling anything, because obviously he does shave at some point, but, and he does fairly decently look and resemble, like, early, you know, Nimoy, although I did see a deep fake of Nimoy's face planted over top of, Ethan Peck's, version of Spock, so that, you know, they changed the face with AI to make it look like Leonard Nimoy was still acting on the show.
And Anson Mount is like the best Christopher Pike we're ever going to get.
Oh yeah. Hands down. He has that charisma of the character and plays it really well.
And he's the right age. Like I thought he was younger than he is, but no, he's actually age appropriate for that character too. And he shows more in his face and what he's thinking than I think most Trek captains have ever done.
Yeah, because Picard's always had kind of the you know, like, I'm annoyed with you face. Yeah. Sisko's always have the, like, I'm ready for a fight face. Janeway's always been like, I could care less face.
Janeway's always been like, I'm impressed with my own voice face. Like she always sounds like she's very impressed with herself. And then Kirk was like, all about,
I'm ready to party.
Yeah, Kirk was like, I'm ready to party, but Kirk is whatever emotion that this Christopher Pike is showing in his eyes and face, Kirk shows outwardly.
Yeah.
To pantomime it to the extreme. It's basically everything that you see, the emotions that you see Shatner go through are all done in his face.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's truly in a testament to his acting ability and being able to play this character and be a polar opposite of what Lorca was in the show.
And he goes from being a star of a Western show to a space Western show. Because that Hell on Wheels, he was great in that. I didn't think he would make the transition, but like he was
in the Inhumans too.
Oh, that's right. And he was terrible in that. Yeah, he's the main guy. He doesn't speak a word in the entire thing.
He plays Black Bolt. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Show was terrible. I was like, how's this going to play out? But then they put him in here and he's great.
Yeah. Like immediately there was no adjusting to him. He was just great immediately. Even when he gets like, you know, like the flash forwards to his fate sort of thing, because we all know what happens to Christopher Pike.
That episode was super emotional.
Well, and you can see it on his face, and he's like, what do I do? And then
but then
you see him compose himself and he's like, I do what I have to. And he's like, it doesn't matter. I can't tell anybody because that would alter things and screw things up. I am going to have to make my fate as I go along.
Yeah. And I love the line he has at the end and of the season, though. But I'm not going to spoil that for Don.
Mike, if you catch up in the next, you know, week or two, or catch up before the show airs, obviously. But like, I think you'll be pretty impressed. You'll probably want to binge the last three or four episodes because you're 2/3 of the way through.
Yeah, it gets really good the last two episodes, especially.
Okay.
Those are like what sold me on Discovery. Although, the unfortunate part is. what happens at the end. So then, yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Leads me to one. Yeah. So anyways, let's move on to the other show. Trek Picard, your thoughts on the news that's been out so far in the speculation.
Please don't screw this up.
Please don't screw this up. When the announcement was made and they showed the trailer, I had the most uncomfortably awesome erection. It was like nerd boner to the max. I could not believe just like, and seeing the trailer, I was like, oh, I thought it was going to be something where he's just basically sitting in an office the entire time, like nothing was happening. It looks like an action show, but at the same time, they're pulling in, like, there are people analyzing every single frame of that trailer.
And I don't think they're going to figure it out.
I think they're throwing people off a lot with it. But at the same time, like, it almost looks like he's becoming like a Maquis leader.
I got from it, the vibe. They're basically duping Star Trek Renegades, just like Discovery did to the Battle of Axanar.
Okay. And also Discovery copied that that text adventure, or that adventure game that they're being sued over.
They basically mixed that adventure game with the Battle of Axanar, and that's how they got Discovery. And now they're trying to change things up. But
if you really want to impress me, show me a trailer that shows Klingons, and it, depending on what their makeup is, will depend on how much nerd rage happens over it.
Pretty much. Yeah, because I still hate the Discovery Klingons.
Yes, it's the worst part of it. Like,
it's if they made them normal, I think the rest of it would make sense.
it would. That's the thing. That's the one hang up I still have over it. I'm still not a fan of people swearing on Star Trek. Because
it's weird.
They did it in the movies, though.
Well, they did
do it in the movies.
Saying "damn it," they did episode.
No, they didn't say that, but they said everything else.
And sorry, you're gonna have to beat me there again.
I meant it.
At the same time, it's odd who's saying it and why they're saying it. It feels like they're saying swear words for the sake of saying it because they can, not because it makes sense to say it.
The only time I've seen it make sense is where the engineer, I can't remember his name,
Stamets is talking
to Tilly, and she's like, "That's fucking." He's like,
"No, that one's."
That made sense to me.
No. To me, that one felt like one of the most odd lines of dialogue. These are military people on a military vessel, and you can speak. You can have a mouth like a sailor, but you don't have that to your superior officer when you're on duty. Like, there's a lot of this that breaks protocol, and I know it's trying to be progressive and everything, but it just didn't jive with me a lot. I loved the new aliens they've introduced, and a lot of the cybernetics involved. A lot of the makeup effects are fantastic, but at the same time, it's another case of the characters behave more Star Trek-y in the Orville. It's obvious, like, Bordas is Klingon, and like they have the same sorts of characters.
TNG.
Yeah, but they add they change just enough to make it fun and interesting. Like Bordas, his species can basically eat anything. So there's that skit in like the first few episodes where they're just like, okay, can you eat this plate? Yeah, can you eat this broken glass? Yeah, and like, or I'm gonna go get a bag of nails, see what happens. Like, they'll throw that sort of stuff in there. There's not really enough shown about
their personality. Crew.
Yeah, with the exception of
well, the only episode they did that was the time loop with Harry Mudd.
Yeah,
yeah. Agreed. Yeah, and like the only characters that are like the only alien that's getting any real, well, there's two. I don't know what episode Mike's on, but Saru gets a lot of time, which is great. And the other one, Mike's episode 10. I can't remember if that the cyborg,
her episode was cool.
Yes, where they show her history, like her memory, and how she has to dump her memory every day, basically to just to refresh her memory. Yeah. Like, that was an interesting episode. But other than that, like, they've had 30 episodes so far, and they've not really focused on... It's been so serialized.
Well, you got a decent amount on Pike, too, which was good.
Yeah, but again, he's not an alien. So they're not... I would like a Trek to come back similar to, like, a... Like, they're a little too serialized here, whereas I felt like Stargate back in the day got it right, where you had a... underlying plot that was happening, a main plot that would go for an entire story arc for a season, but most of the episodes were individualistic, very similar to what TNG was doing. TNG did even more episodic.
Well, but if you look at DS9 or Voyager, they had an overarching like plot.
Yeah, yeah, and then they would have their individual.
They still were individual.
The problem with Discovery is you cannot watch a single episode out of order.
No, you really can't.
No, you can't.
And you can't wait too long between them, otherwise you'll forget what happened.
And yet, with the Orville, you can watch 90% of them out of order and still have fun.
Yep. Unless it's a two-parter.
Yeah, unless it's a two-parter or, you know, anything involving, was it the Krill? Or what were they call them again? It's been a year.
Yeah, the so, Krill.
Yeah, and they seem to leave them alone for, like, they come in, like, the beginning of a season, the middle of a season, the end of a season. But then
They're like the Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, but the rest of the episodes in between are great, and they do callbacks to season one in season two. Like, it's smart. I just feel like Discovery, if you're not hooked in the first episode or two, you can't watch the rest of the show. So they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. The Picard one's going to be limited, so it's one story, which is great. But I think they need to do another trek where they're exploring.
Well, they're going to do more seasons of Picard, which I don't know how they're going to drag that out. But
I know they're going to do 10 episodes. Whatever happened to just making another Star Trek that's about exploring? Like, they finally got Enterprise right in season four, corrected all the things they had, canceled it, and then we've had nothing like that. The only thing keeping that sort of style of story going was the Stargate franchise, because it's The Expanse, all these other shows that have come out since, they always focus on like two or three locations, and that's it. There hasn't been a true exploration space opera since I guess Stargate ended, almost 10 years ago now.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that with Picard, I feel like we're going to be getting a lot of randomness with it in the sense that, like, we know Picard's like supposed to be disgruntled. He's, you know, he left Starfleet because of something that happened and it had to do with the Romulans. Then, you know, they're featuring the Borg in there. They're going to have, you know, Seven of Nine and Hugh, and he's still like, hurt over what happened with Data all those years ago. But they say that B9 is supposed to be, or B4, I call him B9 because that's what he was in the original script. And the novel, they call him B4 in Nemesis, which I thought was stupid. I'm B4. No, it should be B9.
Because he was B9. He was the before model from before.
Yeah, which just lazy writing, in my opinion. But yeah, so they get to his, you know, they say that he's the one that's tore apart in that cabinet in the trailer. And yet, by the end of the trailer, they show Data talking to Picard. And
that's probably all in his head.
And there's a couple different methodologies I think are going on with that. I think either A, Picard's hallucinating. B, it's a holodeck replay, like Picard's playing with a virtual Data on the holodeck. C, they actually do rebuild him, and part of Data's personality comes out during certain situations on B4's, you know, core, you know, shell. Or
I got one.
Data is transferred to a hologram, much like the holographic doctor.
I got one for
and
you.
He is limited,
or his consciousness has been partially transferred into Picard because Picard has remnants from his assimilation, so they're sharing a mind.
That would be interesting, actually. Didn't think of that one. That one's
ooh,
good.
Yeah, I like when I come up with something actually interesting.
that's different. I haven't heard that one anywhere. So that's great.
Because I mean, he's still in First Contact, could hear the whispers.
Yep.
So what's to say that he couldn't, you know, in his obsession to try to get him to work, have some sort of connection to him? I mean, it would be similar to Search for Spock, where Bones, after the mind melt, had a residual echo, right? Like, it could be something like that.
Yeah, I could definitely see that playing out in the course of the show. And I know we're gonna see Riker and Troy show up and they're supposed to be retired from Starfleet, which I think is kind of a mistake.
Grandpa and grandma.
Yeah.
You know, so, I would be happy with if they ever actually got their show, the Titan one, off the ground.
It would have been great, but I know that Michael Dorn wants a Worf show, something terrible, and he already wrote like a pilot for it like 10 years ago.
You know what? Actually, one of the times I think if we go back in the archives like 10 years ago, nearly, I think I gave a voicemail in to talk about that with you guys.
That sounds about right.
I was talking about how there apparently was a Netflix plan in place, and then CBS pulled the plug. It was going to be, I think it was 4 TV movies, which would have been about 8 Worf. Episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. It would have been Worf, great. Yeah. Yeah. It would have been great to have him involved, even back then. But I guess now he's managed to get the doors open again because it would fit nicely with the way the Picard series is going.
Well, especially if that is an exploration, if they make his the exploration movie for whatever reason, they could do them, you know, release a movie every 3 months and tell your story that way. So you get you could use his stuff to tell stories between seasons of other shows.
Yeah. And I think that would help. I think that would be really cool. I'd love to see a Worf show. I'm really excited for the Picard show.
Well, when's Picard coming? Because like as it is now, we're having like full years between like, and not like TV seasons where you're off for 2 or 3 months. Because these are shorter seasons, we're having like almost a whole year between different shows, which is almost too long. It's like people are going to have their interest wane.
It's, let me see when Trek Picard is supposed to come out.
I think it's mid 2020.
That's insane. Like it should have been out in the fall. Because we got to wait, till January again for another
coming
Discovery?
2020. So it's going to be probably out in January, February 2020.
Are they going to?
My guess is March.
Do you think they're going to piggyback off of it, like have the last episode of Discovery and then right after that air the first episode of Picard?
I'm thinking. Because
that would be smart.
That would be smart because then they would stop people from dropping off the service and they're going to release them weekly.
Because as it is in Canada. I think in the States, CBS All Access airs it at 9 p.m. Airs at 8 p.m. Eastern on our cable channel here. So that's why, you know, a lot of times you'll see people on the forums talking about what happened in the episode already before it airs in the States because we get it first. Because I think they put in production money for it. So that would actually be perfect because they could air it at 8 p.m. At 9 p.m. you air Picard. And then at 10 p.m. they air like After Trek. You know, talking about what happened.
See, I honestly don't care about the talking track or any of that.
Yeah, no, but I don't. But I mean, thinking about timeline wise, it would kind of make sense to do something like that.
Yeah, to have them. Yep.
Like, or you know, what,
keep the momentum.
If they really wanted to, they should release them in tandem back to back, and you could own 2 hours of television, and you could get people to come in that wouldn't necessarily watch Discovery regularly because they're disgruntled or. They're more interested in seeing what happened to TNG, but you might get people that subscribe like, hey, wait, I have a 1 hour block every Sunday or Monday or 2 hour block where I can watch Trek. That'll harken back to the days when sci-fi used to have their 3 hour blocks of Stargate Atlantis and Battlestar Galactica. That was the 3 hour power hours on Friday nights. And they basically destroyed every other channel's Friday night programming, even on regular TV. But then again, that's when people used to actually watch, like 5 million people would actually watch a cable channel.
Pretty much. Yeah, I'm excited to see what they do with it. I'm not a fan of the whole having to, you know, pay weekly to watch it.
No, and that's, I mean, for here, we don't have to. Like, if you got a basic cable package, you can watch it as is. Because CBS All Access does not have any Star Trek content in Canada. At all.
Because
another streaming network has the rights. So I think it's only $4.99 for CBS All Access up here because it has basically nothing on it.
Yeah, there's like nothing on it. Like
you want to know something really funny with Star Trek here in the States? We've got it on 3 different services. We've got it on, you can watch every series on Hulu. You can watch every series on Netflix. And you can watch every series on CBS All Access.
Here, I believe all the series are on, is it either Crave or Amazon? and the movies I think are all on Netflix, or one of the two. They're back and forth that way.
Yeah, we don't have we have selective movies on certain services, like, so some of them will randomly be available, but yeah.
Netflix Canada has all the series, none of the movies, and Crave I think has the movies and most of the series, including Discovery.
So CBS All Access has, you can have limited commercials for $5.99 a month, or you can download videos and play offline with commercial free for $9.99 a month.
Oh, see, ours is, I think, $4 American, and it's no commercials. But yeah, all their stuff here is, this is what pisses me off the most, their technology is 10 years old, even though they launched just a year ago or whatever. It's,
well, their streaming service is horrible because I signed up for it when Discovery came out.
It's 720p, low bit rate, and stereo only. So if you go onto all the websites that may happen to have copies of the episode, they all use the Canadian copy from space, because it's aired at 1080i or 1080p with surround sound. Or if you wait a week, they show up on Netflix, and you can use like a VPN to watch the UK Netflix feed, because that's what it airs there in 4K, which isn't even available on video here. It's like what doesn't make any sense. The country of origin has the lowest quality copy.
Yeah, don't you love contracts?
And that's the same with Hulu. Hulu is only stereo, which pisses me off. Like, we're in a day and age now where it takes up no more data to have a surround sound track. And anybody paying for these services that's watching at home has a decent surround sound set, especially the sci-fi fans. So unless you have Amazon, and Crave's only in stereo as well. So like up here, it's basically Amazon, Netflix, and then Disney are going to be the only ones that have surround sound and HDR and all that fancy stuff.
Doesn't surprise me. But granted, the States, we also have really crappy internet connections, depending on where you're at.
Oh, so it's the same here. Like, I would say the average high-speed internet package here is between 50 and 100 meg.
And yeah, ours usually start at, like, 5 to, like, 25 for the low packages.
Well, DSL is 5 to, like, 15 here. But the vast majority of people in any major city, even smaller cities, have cable that has at least 35 meg. And there's usually an option for a data cap of, like, 100 gigs. Or you pay an extra $5 and have unlimited data.
Hmm.
Like, Dodd has 500 meg service, and I've got gigabit.
Well, and, see, the yeah. nice thing is my area where I live, I have Comcast right now, and I have the 50 megabit service, which I think, or 60. But anyways, next year when my contract is
hello,
up with them,
2004, they want their internet back.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was getting 25 back in Michigan, but that's because the expense.
And what does it cost? Like,
they charge you. It's almost $100 for the 60.
I pay 70,
and it's like, yeah, it's like 79
for 1,000 down, 50 up, unlimited.
You want to know what's funny? They're putting in gigabit internet service provided by the city in Colorado. A lot of cities in Colorado put in their own,
and you can pay internet services. Part of your utilities, and probably
because they consider it a utility, so the price never fluctuates. It's always the same price, but you're going to get, I think they said gigabit internet with equal upload and download speeds.
Yeah, there's actually a few cities more north of here. Mike Listowel has it. Eastman, I think, is the cable company there. It's gigabit up, gigabit down. And I think it's $120. Like a gigabit up, because they have the pipeline there. But like, it's funny here. Like, I'm just thinking, my upload speed is faster than your download speed, Steve. So, and
no, I know.
Upload, like, I tell you what's really funny. It's
my upload is like 6.
Oh, God. What I love is when, let's say it's like, oh man, Windows is going to take forever to update through the Windows update. I'll go and get the manual, like, I need to make a media creation tool so I can use my key. And you got to download that like 7 gig file. I'll click on it and I'll go to the bathroom, come back, and it finished in 35 seconds. And it's like 4 or 5 gigs.
You're like, ta-da.
It's like, I'm like, oh, it's so worth paying for it.
Yeah. See, I'm like I said, I'm looking forward to having the better internet service once that that comes out. And well, so it's
basically, yeah. I got it. I could have gotten away with like 250 meg for the amount of streaming we do, but like, it's for streaming everything because we don't have cable. Everything we watch is through streaming services. So you can have two or three TVs on and not have it hinder anything. But the big thing is, for us, when we do a lot of stuff for Twig and podcasting, we share a lot of fairly large files. We're dealing in like gigabyte files, and just doing file sharing between and work sharing, it's so much better having this kind of speed. Because even uploading it at 50 megs will still take a while, but it's like, you know, Birdman will be like, "Hey, Alex, I got a review ready for your show." Okay, I'll click to download, and it's done like immediately.
That's so nice. That must have made it much easier when you were making backup copies of the server.
Oh, the server? I got 86 gigs in 40 minutes, and that was only because a lot of them were very small files. So, you know, they take a little while to transfer. Like, because it's funny, large files transfer faster for sustained rates and everything, but it was like, yeah, it's like, oh, I'm going to download a backup of the server. And I read the actual web service said, oh, it can take, be prepared to take several hours, right? And I'm like, okay, so I'll let it go overnight. I got up and like went to make a sandwich. And I was like, oh, it's done. I was like, wait a minute. I just downloaded more data than my entire school had in high school in like grade 9 when the hard drives, almost every hard drive at the school was like 2 gigs.
Nice.
It's like I just downloaded the entire school board's like worth of computers in 40 minutes.
Nice. So I think we're gonna call it quits, just because it's getting a little long and it's getting a little late. Hope everybody's had a good time on this conversation, and we'll continue next time with the talks about the franchises, the universes, the trilogies, all the
I've got some pretty extensive thoughts on that for next
yes
week.
As do same. I and I think
I'll,
that
I'll
that will,
notes.
That'll lend to an entire episode all on its own, so expect that next episode, other than if we get feedback, so that'll be pretty much very heavy episode on that. How can the people get a hold of you on the internets?
If you want to get a hold of me, the most reliable ways to find me on Twitter, which is at birdmandot. I'm almost always on there. You can also email me, mike@thisweekingeek.net. I tend to reply to everybody unless you're a douchebag.
Then we'll just make fun of you secretly behind your back if you're a douchebag.
Exactly.
With goat sounds.
Yeah. For me, it's very similar. It's alex@thisweekingeek.net. We also have the feedback at thisweekingeek.net. Look us up on Facebook. It's just our names or the actual This Week in Geek. You can go through the website. There's plenty of different ways to get in touch with us. And we're always lurking on Facebook and Twitter and occasionally Discord and other various methods.
I always lurk on Twitter. So thank you, as always, for listening to Altered Geek. I've been your host, along with...
Mike the Birdman Dodd.
He couldn't let it go, man.
Spicy Alex.
Spicy Alex. So
I'm laughing, but at the same time, I feel bad because I can hear you making show notes about, oh, I got to put another one in. But again, I'm going to beat the world record holder, right? Like...
You beat that a long time ago.
You did?
During your tirade.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm king.
You've repeated the words. Yes. So, you are king.
So I'm king. Okay, well, take that, Blanchard. I won't do this anymore.
Thank goodness. That's so much editing.
It's going to be worth it.
No, it won't. You, of course, can interact with me and the show on Twitter at SCP21 at Altered Geek. This episode's post on Facebook and, of course, on GeekCastRadio.com. So until next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.
My hovercraft is full of ears.
This This is the sound of your child's self-esteem. This is their creativity. This is the sound of their curiosity. And when you put it all together, this is what the Royal Conservatory of Music can do for your child.
Learning music builds brains. The Royal Conservatory of Music has produced some of Canada's greatest minds. Visit rcmusic.com to find a teacher and unlock your child's intellectual and social potential.
When it comes to your phone, you want data first. So Eastlink is giving you 10 gigs for only $70. With that many gigs, never worry about going over your limit. Upload all your photos. Well, except that awkward selfie. Use GPS all over town. Say good morning and good night with video chat. It's time for more data at a price that's fair. 10 gigs for only $70. That's the Eastlink Edge. Visit an Eastlink store today to learn more.
Technology Truths, brought to you by GEICO.
Technology Truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at GEICO.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Your home is important. That's why GEICO helps make it easy to save on condo insurance. Because home is more than just a place. Home is where you took minimalism too far because there's only one chair in your entire condo and your only entertainment is one card. Not even a deck of cards, but a single card. And all your guests have to share one plate and one fork, but you're convinced that less stuff means more freedom. The GEICO Insurance Agency could help protect the overly minimalist broom closet you call home. Call GEICO and see how easy it is to switch and save on condo insurance.